Welcome back to Twisted Sisters Podcast. It's been forever.
Yes, it has.
You know, life gets in the way, but 2019, we're both committed to having a more regular schedule and recording, because the first reason we did this is for each other and for our family relationship. So family is important to us, and the few listeners that are out there, you guys are important to us too. So I'm Kylie.
I'm Katie.
And Katie is a little under the weather right now, but we're gonna we're gonna march forward.
Yes, just keep on going. Just gonna hack up along every now and then, but we're fine.
Oh, poor Kate. All right, so today is the 10th of February, which means Valentine's Day is on Thursday. We're recording on Sunday. So our topic today is going to be Valentine's.
Valentine's and the weird thing
love
about that. Like the Valentine's mm-hmm. Day massacre. Ugh, so much love.
Ah. And then I am going to tell you about the, I honestly forgot what they're called right now. It's great.
Nice.
Because they don't have them anymore. The Lonely Hearts Killers.
The Lonely Hearts Killers. Ooh, I've never heard this.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't heard it either. So, like, the Lonely Hearts ads, I don't think they even make them anymore because newspapers are going out and... Yeah, they might somewhere in the world, but it's not as common anymore. Do you want to go first? Katie? Oh, no. Are you there? No, no.
Can you not hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, Jesus.
I can hear you. Okay. What the fuck is happening?
I don't know.
This is a hot mess.
Well, just like us. It's fine.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Okay. So, for those of you that don't know, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre was nearly 90 years ago this year. It happened in 1929.
Wow.
Yeah, right? It was one of the most notorious, like, gang fights in the world at the time, just because of who it involved. Though no one was ever really convicted for this, it involved Al Capone and Bugs Moran, or George Moran. They were, like, the two biggest gangsters in Chicago, Illinois at the time. And this was during the time of Prohibition. So these two used to bring in lots of booze, and they had, you know, their clubs and all that stuff. So, somehow Al Capone set up Bugs Moran to receive what he thought was going to be a bunch of, like, whiskey. So they had a shipment set up for Valentine's Day morning. And what actually showed up was a Cadillac, which looked like the police cars of the time. And some of the guys getting out of the car were dressed as cops. So they lined up all of Moran's men and had them face the wall with their hands
and he coughed.
Yeah, he coughed. Their hands were against the wall with their backs to the men, and these guys just sprayed them with bullets. Just a massacre, obviously. They killed these seven guys that were expecting to get all this booze. But really, they wanted to get Bugs Moran out of the way. He was supposed to have been there, but he was running late. So luckily that guy didn't die that day.
Fate.
Yeah, but it did basically destroy his whole bootleg business. This is one of the things that made Al Capone one of the most feared gangsters of the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where was this?
It was in Chicago.
Chicago, okay.
Yes. Let me see. But even though... sorry, guys.
You're okay, Kate. It's okay.
Al Capone was never convicted for this, mm-hmm. or anyone else, he did have a price to pay for his involvement in what happened. It's said that one of the ghosts of his victims and a brother-in-law to Bugs Moran,
mm-hmm.
would have his own retribution by tormenting Capone until the day he died. So people think that this brother-in-law to Moran haunted him until he died of syphilis.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
That is crazy. See, I knew about it happening, but I didn't know like the specific like details of what happened. I kind of knew that they like killed a bunch of people, but I didn't know why and like what for. And...
yeah, it's just a gang rivalry, really. I mean,
damn.
Yeah, but it's said that when during a 9-month stay at the Eastern State Penitentiary, mm-hmm. a bunch of inmates would report hearing Capone in his cell screaming at someone named Jimmy, begging him to go away and leave me alone. And during the daytime hours, Capone wouldn't speak to anyone in prison about what he was talking about.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And the guy's name that he that was haunting him, James Clark.
Mm-hmm. Oh. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's awesome. I would definitely want to hunt somebody who killed a family member. So I can't remember. Do you know if Al Capone died in prison? Or was he at home? Oh, man.
What?
Are you back?
Yeah.
Okay, I could not hear you.
Oh. Don't worry, I'm still here dying.
Oh, no dying.
All right.
No dying.
That's all I had on the Valentine's Day Massacre, was that Jimmy Clark followed him to the grave.
That's awesome. Right. I know that there was like some sort of like Ghost Adventures episode, mm-hmm. where Zach, like, either there's some museum, I don't think it was his museum,
uh-huh.
but there was like parts of that wall that they had taken, like the brick that had bullet holes in it, and it was like really haunted. Like they put the wall in glass.
Ooh.
And like stuff would move around, and like there were like, I think they heard like people screaming and like actual gunshots.
Ooh.
In the night. Yeah, I don't know if that's accurate, but that's kind of what I remember about it.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. So I am going to tell you about the Lonely Hearts Killers.
Ooh.
Raymond Fernandez and Martha Beck. This is around the same time. This was a little bit after. You said yours happened in 29? Yes.
1929.
Okay. So this happened in 1948 to 1949. So quite some time afterward, but still not recent.
Mm-hmm.
So a historical case. Okay. And I'm just going to start. Okay. So Fernandez started as a con man, and he often lured wealthy women in with these Lonely Hearts ads he would place in a romance magazine. He would seduce these lonely women and rob them.
Ooh.
Yeah. And one of the turning point that they think was one of his victims, Jane Thompson, from con to murder.
Ooh.
But it's not 100%. It's not proven. Jane traveled with him to Spain, and he talked her into changing her will, making him the sole beneficiary. So he had been dating this woman, wanted to go to Spain. They acted as if they were a married couple, staying in honeymoon suites and doing all these things, even though they weren't married.
Ooh.
And he made her change her will. And then she died under mysterious circumstances. And he told one person that she had had a heart attack, and then another told them, which would be Thompson's mother, that she died in a train accident.
What?
Yeah, I don't know why he would have told that. From what I found from my research, like, they all kind of say the same thing, was that he told people there that she had had a heart attack, and then her mom and her family that she died in a train accident, which I just don't.
Okay, so those are two very different things. Like, how could his family be like, oh, well, yeah, I bet she just, you know, died in that train accident. Obviously, she would have been in 20 million pieces.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe it had something to do with her family history and, like, her health history. Hmm. So he told everybody that didn't know her that she had a heart attack. And then if he thought that if he told her mother that she had a heart attack, she wouldn't believe it. Like, that's weird. She never had, like, a health problem.
That's so weird.
I don't know. So, but that's what it says. He told people differing stories. But whatever the case, he wound up with her money. Yes. So he had conned lots of women in the past, taking them on dates, stealing their money, stealing valuables. And a lot of these women knew what was happening to them, like, afterward. And they never went to the police because they were embarrassed.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, back in that time, I don't know how cops would have reacted to women saying that. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a lot of respect. So I feel like if they went to the police, they would just be like, you're stupid. No, that never happened. Stop trying to ruin a man's life.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he never got caught with the women that knew what was happening and knew what happened to them. So this was kind of his turning point, they think, into potential murder. There's no proof that he did it, but there's, you know, like, she disappeared. Everything had changed, though, when Martha Beck responded to his ad in the magazine.
So are these, like, ads in a paper people used to place?
Yes. So I guess there was, they said it was a magazine, like a love and romance magazine that was out back in the day. And it was sent out nationally. So, yeah. And she was overweight because of a gland problem.
Mm-hmm.
and had a lot of issues. She grew up. In her trial, she claimed that she was sexually assaulted by her brother when she was 10 years old. And her mother, she told her mom what happened, and her mom basically beat her and told her that it was her fault. Mm. Yeah. And she had two children.
Mm-hmm.
One, she had, she was a nurse in California and dated a Navy guy. And she had gotten pregnant, and he basically tried to commit suicide because he didn't want to have a child with her. So it just seemed like a lot of men in her life. She wasn't very respected. It's hard being overweight today, but back then it was even a, you know, it was harder because people aren't as positive about different body shapes as they are now. So she was really disrespected by her whole family and by the men that she was seeing. Later she got pregnant with her, who would become her first husband. They got married because she got pregnant and were only married for about 6 months before he filed for divorce. So she was a single mother of two, living in Florida, working at a nursing home. And she read this magazine hoping to basically like escape. She, all she wanted in her life, I think, was a man to take care of her. And she read these magazines and she found his ad. So she answered his ad. And he came from New York to meet her in person in Florida. And they hit it off.
Wow.
Yeah. And some of the articles that I read said that he just planned to con her so that her being overweight was just like whatever to him, because he didn't get any gratification out of her romantically. It was just monetarily. But I don't know if I believe that, because I'll explain why later. So they really, really hit it off, and he returned to New York, and she prepared for them to get married. They had heard about this at work, and of course, it being the 40s, she was fired from her job shortly after because they had heard that she was going to get married.
Right.
So she took her kids and followed him to New York. Fernandez was loving all of the attention that he was getting from her, and he quickly filled her in on his devious plans to defraud lonely women, and she decided that it was her duty to join in. She'd finally found love and was just gonna accept it no matter the cost. At this point, this is what's even more shocking, she even gave her children away so that she could devote herself to Fernandez full time. On January 29th, I believe it was, January 25th, 1948, she left them at a Salvation Army. And it only mentions one of her children, Willa Dean, being eventually adopted and changing her name to Carmen. So she abandoned her kids for this criminal. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't hearing any response, so I was wondering if you were still there.
That's just insane. Jesus.
Yeah.
She just leaves her kids just so she can go gallivant around with this con man and...
Oh. Yeah, she knows. She knows he's a bad guy. Oh. And she's like, all right, whatever. All right. The couple killed upwards of 20 women that they lured in with their Lonely Hearts ads and were active from the years 1948 to 1949.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they get together, they're having a great time, and it basically just escalated. So from what I had found, Raymond was a really interesting person. He was born on December 17th, 1914 in Hawaii to Spanish parents. Yeah, it was really interesting. So as an adult, he moved to Spain, married somebody, had four children.
Wow.
And then he abandoned everybody. So she's not the only one with abandoning families and moving on. He actually served in British intelligence during World War II.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Shit. They need to scream
that.
Yeah,
it's super weird. Yeah. Well, so what they think happened was he was normal and he was working the intelligence during World War II. Yeah. And then after deciding to seek work, he boarded a ship bound for America back home. And a steel hatch fell on top of him, fracturing his skull and injuring his frontal lobe. What they say about a lot of serial killers is that if your frontal lobe is injured before the time you're 22 or 23, that can affect the way you behave. It kind of changes you as a person. Not every serial killer has had this happen to them, but they've done a lot of studies and lots of them have had that happen. There's this really good podcast called Happy Face, and it's about the Happy Face Killer in Seattle.
Ooh.
And yes, and he had that happen to him. He fell, cracked his skull, and damaged his frontal lobe when he was a teenager. And so they think that's what happened. So this is what happened to this guy. The damage left by this injury may well have affected his social and sexual behavior. After his release from a hospital, he ended up stealing some clothing and was in prison for a year, during which time his cellmate taught him voodoo and black magic.
It's always that black magic that gets you.
Yeah. He later claimed that black magic gave him irresistible power and charm over women. After serving his sentence, he moved to New York City and began answering personal ads by lonely women and starting his scams. So it seems that he had this injury, changed entirely as a person, and began as a con artist, and then later escalating into violence. So, yeah, in 1947, he answered the personal ad placed by Martha Beck. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. Some of them, it says that he answered it. Others say that she had answered his ad. It's very confusing. But not all important. Someone answered the ad, and they got together. All right. So let's go with the killings. Their killing spree began in New York and ended in Michigan, where they were caught and arrested after a double murder of a young mother and her 2-year-old child. Michigan had no death penalty, so they extradited them back to New York to stand trial for murder there. So that's how they were caught. There are 3 murders that they were convicted of, but they claimed to kill upwards of 20 women.
Wow.
Their first victim, their first victim together was 66-year-old Janet Fay. So they would go along with their typical con. He was a handsome man. He had money. And his wife posed as his sister.
Right.
Giving him an air of respectability. Their victims often stayed with them or with her, and she was extremely jealous and would go to great lengths to make sure that he and his intended never consummated their relationship. And when he did have sex with them, both were subjected to Beck's violent temper. So it's kind of like Crimson Peak is what I was thinking of.
Great.
But they were, yeah. But they weren't actually siblings.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert to those who haven't seen that movie. Anyway, in 1949, the pair committed the 3 murders of which they would be later convicted. Janet Fay, 66, became engaged to Fernandez and went to stay at his Long Island apartment. When Beck saw her and Fernandez in bed together, she smashed Fay's head in with a hammer in a murderous rage.
Oh, my God.
And Fernandez came in and strangled her. Faye's family became suspicious, and the couple just moved on to a new victim. They traveled to Byron Center Road in Wyoming Township, Michigan, a suburb of Grand Rapids, and met Delphine Downing, a young widow with a 2-year-old daughter. They both stayed with Downing and became agitated. Downing had become agitated, and Fernandez gave her sleeping pills. So I assume that she became irritated with those two and suspected them mm-hmm. of being together, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They were both irritated with Downing's crying daughter, and Beck strangled her, though not killing her. Fernandez thought Downing would become suspicious if they saw her bruised daughter, so he shot the unconscious woman. The couple then stayed for several days in the house, and Beck, enraged by the daughter's crying and loss of her mother, drowned her in a basin of water.
Wow.
Yeah. They ended up burying the bodies in the basement of the house, but suspicious neighbors reported their disappearance, and police arrived at that door on February 28th, 1949.
Hmm.
Yes. And they, after killing Janet Fay, Fernandez and Beck placed her body in a trunk. They then took it to Fernandez's actual sister house, located in Queens, and buried it in her basement. Concrete was poured over it, further hiding the details of their crime. Yeah. Hmm. So they like to bury people in basements.
That's creepy. There's just a reason you stay out of basements.
Yeah. They're haunted always. Always haunted because, you know, the previous person killed someone down there.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, like, really fucked up. Let's see. Oh, okay. I'm almost to the end. I like have a bunch of like random research sprawled out together. It's awful. Okay. Their trial and execution. Fernandez quickly confessed with the understanding that they would not be extradited to New York because they were in Michigan. Michigan had no death penalty, but New York did. And they were extradited. Because they, I think they were suspected in Faye's murder and her family were asking questions. I think that's why.
Hmm.
They vehemently denied 17 murders that were attributed to them. And Fernandez tried to retract his confession, saying he only did it to protect Beck.
Right.
They ended up being convicted of only the 3 murders and sentenced to death. On March 8th, 1951, both were executed by electric chair. So while they were on death row, they were separated, but in the same prison, from what I understand. It's really weird. At the time, it was really different. They were executed at the same prison. I guess there were women's wings and men's wings. And even on death row, lots of messages were spread and sent throughout. It was said that she was having an affair with a guard, and word got back to him about that, and he was really upset, obviously. And about him getting letters from somebody, that was a rumor, and she was upset about that. I don't know what happened first, but lots of problems happened throughout the rumors and throughout their time on death row. And despite their tumultuous arguments and their relationship problems, they always profess their love to each other.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Gross.
even in their last words.
What were their last words?
Raymond Fernandez. Raymond Fernandez's last words were, "I want to shout it out. I love Martha. What do the public know about love?" Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't say, it doesn't give much detail on his last meal. But it tells hers. So on March 8th, her last morning, Martha ate a good breakfast of ham, eggs, and coffee and took a shower. Hmm. According to the death row log, Martha ate fair dinner, laundry sent out, returned, and checked. According to her written instructions, the last meal consisted of fried chicken, no wings, French fries, lettuce, and tomato salad.
Hmm.
Oh, no, it does say. I found it. Fernandez ordered an onion omelet, French fries, chocolate, and a Cuban cigar. He was especially nervous and confided to prison guards that he may not hold up under the pressure. As the hour grew near, Martha sent Fernandez a note professing her undying love. "The news brought to me that Martha loves me is the best I've had in years. Now I'm ready to die. So tonight, I'll die like a man."
Ugh.
Yeah. They're just very weird people.
Well, I mean, I guess to each their own, I guess.
Ugh. Yeah. True love.
Yeah, you found before. Your other half, man. You found her.
I mean, yeah, they kind of did. They kind of did.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Yep. Before she had this final request, "What does it matter who is to blame?" she said. "My story is a love story, but only those tortured with love can understand what I mean. I was pictured as a feeling woman. I am not unfeeling, stupid, or moronic. In the history of the world, how many crimes have been attributed to love?" What?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I can say too. Because I don't know what else to say. It's just too much.
They were both just batshit crazy.
They pretty much were. She died at the age of 31, and they were both executed in the electric chair at Sing Sing Prison.
Was it the same
day? He was executed, yes.
Aww.
He was executed before her, following two other executions that day. So they just, back in the day, they just did it in, like, hordes of, like, four or five. They were like,
one right after
yeah.
another.
Yep. Your turn, your turn, your turn, your turn. They barely cleaned off the ashes from the previous person. They just swiped it with their hand and were like, "Okay, your turn."
Ugh.
I'm kidding. I don't think there's any ashes, but, you know. So they were known as the serial killer couple, the honeymoon killers, and the lonely hearts killers.
Hmm.
Yep. It doesn't say anything about his family. But at the time of her death, she was survived by her mother, her ex-husband, two children, and her two children, Carmen and Anthony, one brother, and three of her sisters. It's crazy. There are several movies and an episode of a TV series based on this case. Honeymoon Killers, from 1970, the 1996 movie Deep Crimson, and the 2006 movie Lonely Hearts. Cold Case did an episode as well.
Ooh.
All based on the case. So there you have it. The Lonely Hearts Killers.
The Lonely Hearts Killers.
Her last words are very, very thematic, I gotta say.
I get that, yeah.
"What does it matter who is to blame? My story is a love story, but only those tortured with love can understand what I mean. I was pictured as a fat, unfeeling woman. I am not in feeling stupid or moronic. In the history of the world, how many crimes have been attributed to love? Ugh. So there you go. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day from us at Twisted Sisters.
As a Sisters podcast. The awkward podcast. The awkward one. Yeah.
Well, make sure you tune in next time when we talk about some weird shit that's happened. And I tell Kylie how psychic I am.
Oh, what?
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's the next one. It's just, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so awesome. All right. Well, I guess we're signing off. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Make sure you don't kill anyone this Valentine's Day.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't kill your lover. Don't kill anybody. Don't do what they did. It's not cool.
No, it's not.
If you are into something creepy, though, I mean, you could always order pizza, get all romantic, and just watch a few episodes of Dexter. Like, why not?
Yeah, that sounds like a good Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Get a heart.
What are your plans, Kate?
Yes. Probably pretty similar to what you just said. Okay. Pizza and
awesome.
Dexter.
Oh, so the exact same thing.
Oh, good. So we're on the same page.
Yeah, same exact page. Yep. There's a reason we're siblings. God, we're so awkward. Anyways, thanks for listening. We love you guys. Keep it twisted. Bye.